Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Crossland, Corsa and Mokka. Three good reasons to visit the Opel Open Road event.
Now, our COVID-19 Delta wave appears to have stabilised, but Taoiseach Micheál Martin warned last night that government remains concerned numbers could flip in the wrong direction very quickly. Tánaiste Leo Varadkar told his parliamentary party he's sceptical that new restrictions would be warranted at this time. Globally, however, attention remains on the Omicron variant, of which we identified the first case here just yesterday, and how it is affecting populations where it has taken hold. In a moment, we'll hear from South Africa, where it's spreading rapidly in one region, and from Israel, which is ahead of us on the booster rollout. But first, Dr. Nuala O'Connor is COVID lead with the Irish College of General Practitioners, and she joins me on the line now. Good morning, Dr. O'Connor.
Good morning, Claire.
Thanks very much for speaking to us today. Now, I know you were briefing GPs last night in an online webinar on various issues. So where do we stand now? What are the key issues that GPs are seeing at the moment, looking ahead to Christmas just 3 weeks away?
Well, at the moment, we're still very busy in general practice dealing with people who have symptoms of infection. Some of them have COVID, but we still also have an awful lot of circulating normal winter viruses. So the RSV, the rhinoviruses, the things that cause cough, cold, sore throats, earaches. So we're dealing with a huge amount of people with infection. We're referring a lot of people for COVID tests. Fortunately, it does look like there's a little bit of stabilisation in some of the COVID numbers, which is good. But how we all behave in the next 2 weeks is critical to what our Christmas is going to be like. And we've heard Tony Holland talk about the intergenerational mixing that we know will go on, and we want it to happen at Christmas. But we do know that there's still quite a high level of COVID cases. We're over 4,000 per day in this country. So the Delta is currently, it really is still continuing to spread. So if all of us can be careful about how we socialise in the next 2 weeks, try to get those numbers down a little, it will mean we can all have a more meaningful Christmas.
When you say try to get the numbers down, is there a goal or a target in mind for where we'd hope to get to by Christmas?
I think it's difficult to put a goal or a target, but what we'd like to see is a downward trend. A downward trend in the numbers day by day that they start to go down. And we know that, you know, there are multiple ways that we are actually doing this. So we can see that the booster campaign, as you know, we've been boosting. We started, as we always do, with the most vulnerable, with the over 80s and those in long-term care facilities. And we're working down through the age groups. We're now doing onto the 60s. And we're also doing people who are immunocompromised or people who have certain medical conditions. And we can see, actually, in the case numbers, it's a sort of a shift to the left. So, yes, there are more cases in younger age groups, but there are less cases in the older age groups and the more vulnerable who've been boosted. So the booster campaign is well underway. Mm-hmm. But the booster campaign, it's going to take a while because you have to wait until somebody's at least 5 months since their previous, since their second dose. So that's actually going to span out over the next weeks to months. So that's why all of the other measures, this virus loves, as you know, Claire, when we get together, and the Irish love to get together and socialise, and it loves when we're indoors. So the next couple of weeks is about just choosing wisely. We don't want people to stop living their lives. We all have to live our lives and learn to live with this virus. But yeah, we just need to choose a little bit more carefully about who we socialise with, where we socialise with, and minimise the risk.
And it's not beyond the realms of possibility, given what you're saying, that we're facing a Christmas this year that looks a lot like the Christmas we had last year.
It's possible, Claire, but, you know, again, unfortunately, COVID is this virus that, you know, just keeps turning around and surprising us. And we actually have to go on the basis of what's actually currently happening in our country. But when you think about it, I mean, we do have, our society is virtually open now. There's an awful lot of things that we can do. And I think it's important that we focus on what we can do. And I can still think we can have a very meaningful Christmas.
OK, you figured as well, Dr. O'Connor, on how many more people have recently received their first COVID vaccine.
Yes, actually, it's fantastic. I mean, we know Ireland is really good in terms of the amount of people who have taken up vaccine. We have 93% of our adults over 18 vaccinated, 91% of our over 12s fully vaccinated. But each week and last week, 10,000 new people came forward who had never been vaccinated before. And it's reaching out to those who've been hesitant about vaccinating. And I do understand some people, you know, they have genuine concerns, but there are we know that the vaccination provides really good protection. And another group are people who are pregnant. And again, the numbers of pregnant women taking up the offer of vaccination are rising week on week. And that is just fantastic.
Now, I want to talk to you a little bit more about the booster campaign. And you explained there earlier on that you have to wait 5 months before the booster can be given to somebody. So is that placing an administrative burden on GPs who are having to figure out who's eligible and when?
Well, it's just slightly more complex than at the start of this, when we just did all our over 80s, that was it. They'd never been vaccinated before, so you just did all your over 80s. But now, when we're running a booster vaccine clinic, we may have people who it's 5 months since their second vaccine. They may be immunocompromised, so we can give it after 2 months. They may have had the Janssen vaccine, so then they can have it after 3 months. So we just, you know, it's just a little bit more complex, and it just takes a little bit longer to figure out and just to be absolutely certain. And unfortunately, what it means is occasionally somebody turns up and they're just a little bit too early, or they don't meet the category. And I do understand it's very traumatic for people, and I know it's happened at the mass vaccination clinics as well. But you do need to be the 5 calendar months if you're for a booster a campaign since your second vaccine. And the HSE website is really good and really clear if you're trying to figure out where you will actually come. And I know some people wonder, why can't we boost faster? But we can't boost until you're at least 5 months. And if you look back to when people finished their second dose, many people in their 60s didn't get their second dose until July or August. So they're actually only coming on stream now in the second half of December to be eligible for their a booster dose.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just the booster rollout campaign that's complex at the moment. The public health advice itself is more complicated now than it had been when it comes to close contacts and so on.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And last night I went through a scenario where you had a mixture in a household. So you had a family of five, and when one person becomes positive, depending on whether the others have been vaccinated or not vaccinated, or what job that they do, or whether they've had COVID in the last 9 months and recovered, that has a bearing on what the public health advice is for them. So again, just the conversations that we have with people, and I do think it's a little bit tricky for the public sometimes to try to figure out. And I know that if you have a positive test, you're uploading your contacts, then there's a series of text messages. But again, the HSE website is really, really good. It has fantastic information on what the implications of being a close contact, either a household contact or a close contact in the community, or if somebody in your house tests positive or a friend tests positive.
Dr. O'Connor, we'll leave it there for now, but thank you very much for talking to us. Dr. Nuala O'Connor, who is the COVID lead with the Irish College of General Practitioners. In Israel, the health minister there has been speaking about room for optimism when it comes to the effect of the Omicron variant on people who have a valid vaccine or a booster. And for more on this, I'm joined by Nadav Davidovich, who is Professor of Epidemiology and Director of Ben-Gurion University's School of Public Health, and also a member of the expert panel advising the government on COVID. Good morning, Professor. What is the early data showing you?
The data is mainly from South Africa. We have excellent connections there, including a former Israeli who's sitting on the advisory committee. According to the preliminary data, and again, we need to be very cautious, and the data is also from the first cases in Israel, it seems that the variant can spread faster, even than Delta. We still need to wait and see exactly how fast. But on the other hand, it seems that the clinical cases are mild. Of course, we need to wait because sometimes clinical cases develop later. There are a vaccine breakthrough, but in terms of preventing hospitalization and, of course, death, there are good signs. But again, these are very preliminary data that we need still to confirm.
Okay, there were concerns, weren't there, that the cases that have been seen thus far are in younger people, so the clinical information mightn't be as clear-cut.
Yes, I totally agree. We need to have a representative sample. We need to continue and follow. But I must say that according to, let's say, virological theories, modeling, I don't think it would be reasonable to say that this new variant will escape totally the vaccine. Maybe we're going to see some reduction, you know, from 95%, that is, you know, an amazing protection, maybe to 70%, 60%. There are, of course, also laboratory trials to show us in the laboratory what about the antibodies. Are they neutralizing? I'm talking both about antibodies and a T-cell response. And of course, on the clinical and epidemiological level. And again, it's too early, but we continue to follow.
What does this information mean for unvaccinated people?
I think there are several important messages. One, go vaccinate. Of course, if you had two doses and it's more than 6 months, please go and take your third dose. I mean, this is the advice from Israel, according to our data, and I'm talking about all age groups. But vaccinations are not enough. We still need to comply to use of masks. In Israel, masks are being used, especially in closed spaces, or if there is large gatherings outside. And hygiene, ventilating classes. So vaccinations are, again, very important. And we need to have a multi-layer approach, and especially also the contact tracing and genetic typing. That's something that need to be strengthened. This will be good also after corona with other infectious diseases.
What does Israel consider now to be fully vaccinated? Does fully vaccinated mean you've had three shots?
Yes, we stopped calling it a booster. We think that we need the third dose as part of the regimen. And again, for all age groups, there's waning immunity that was shown in all age groups. You know, the priority is first you need to have the first dose. So people that didn't have them, and in Israel, unfortunately, we still have about 600,000. You need to approach them. You need to be very proactive. You need to target your messages according to the specific subgroups using social sciences. So the first dose is the most important one, but the third one is also important. It's not a 0-1. People with two doses are protected, but 10 times less than people with the third dose.
It's interesting for us, of course, to watch what's happening in Israel because you're ahead of us when it comes to vaccination. Are you seeing any waning after the third dose?
So this is one of the most important questions. We see for sure that there is no similar waning immunity that similar to what happened after the second dose. So there is some reduction in antibodies, but this is normal. I mean, for any vaccine, finally, the antibodies are going down. The question is the memory and the T cell, the cellular response, and also, of course, the epidemiological data. And for now, we see that after several months, I myself was vaccinated by the end of July. According to the different cohorts, including in healthcare workers and in the public, it's different than after the second dose. Another question than waning immunity, of course, the question of variants, and maybe we need an adapted vaccine like we're doing with influenza. So maybe once a year we need an adapted vaccine. But, you know, all of this is still under investigation and we need to wait.
Right around the world, there have been calls for people not to panic over the new variant. Your information, what does it tell you about how concerned we should be about Omicron?
I don't think that panicking is a good policy tool in general, also for personal behavior. I think concern is the right word, being alert. I think that unfortunately, since we have, you know, a gap among countries, between countries, regarding vaccination rates, this is a fertile ground for variants. So we must have a concentrated effort by the global community. And that's something that is very unfortunate. I'm talking not just about the COVAX initiatives. I'm talking also about the intellectual property and patents. I think that we need a political will to see how different countries can, you know, produce vaccines in a much faster pace and have people being vaccinated.
And related to that, the World Health Organization has criticized travel bans, criticized border closures. Israel was quick to close its borders. Is there any point in doing that if the variant is already in a country?
That's an excellent question. We closed the border for 2 weeks. I think personally, and this will be my advice, that probably now it's you know, a good way to rethink and reconsider this. We closed the border for non-Israelis. Israelis, of course, can return doing according to their vaccination status, either 3 days or 7 days of quarantine, including two PCR tests and genetic typing. But I totally understand the frustration of people from Africa. You know, they were not supported to be vaccinated, and now they were the first to announce the new variant that maybe, you know, came from another place. So we need to be very proportionate, and that's something to reconsider now.
Now, there were two reports earlier in the week about the Israeli doctors, two Israeli doctors who had three doses of Pfizer. They both tested positive for the new variant. They were showing mild symptoms, according to the information we have. Is there any update on their condition?
They're still, only in a very mild condition. But it's showing us that vaccinations are not enough, and this is why we need to take other precautions such as masks. But on the other hand, vaccinations are a very important protection layer. So again, I'm suggesting everybody to go and vaccinate, including the third dose if it's after 6 months.
And one of those doctors, he's absolutely convinced that he picked up this COVID variant at a medical conference in London, which would seem to suggest that the variant was in London prior to the discovery of it in South Africa.
Probably the variant now is all over the world, or most of it. And this is why we need to share information between countries. It's part of the international health regulations. And this is why it's important to use the nomenclature, you know, not calling it, you know, the South African variant or the Chinese virus, because many times something is discovered in one place, but actually it was brought from another, and it can create racism and inequalities. So we need to be proportionate, and it's very hard sometimes to see in a state of uncertainty what to do. But again, I think that maybe we need to reconsider now some of the travel bans.
Okay, what about boosters from here on after you've had your third dose? You have had yours, I think you said, in July of this year. Do you think that everyone is going to need a booster shot annually?
Nobody really knows. Again, there's a factor of waning immunity. There's also the factor of variants. There is a good choice that maybe we'll need a yearly vaccine, but adapted to the different variants. That's something that we're still following. It's really hard to tell right now, but we need to prepare for it.
Professor Davidovich, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you. Lots of health.
As Nadab Davidovich said, a lot of the preliminary data is coming from South Africa. And for more on this story, I'm joined by Professor Mark Mendelson, who's head of infectious diseases and HIV medicine at Gutaskier Hospital at the University of Cape Town. You're very welcome, Professor Mendelson. Thank you for joining us on the programme. Now, we know that health officials there in South Africa are warning about this worrying surge in new cases. Can you take us through the most recent figures that you have?
Well, the majority of the cases at the moment are in a single province in South Africa. We know that the Omicron variant really is now being picked up across provinces in South Africa, but still the main transmission and the new cases are really in Gauteng province, which is where Johannesburg and the city of Tshwane, which was previously called Pretoria, sits. And the number of cases are increasing from a very low level. We've just really, we've been in the valley, as it were, of our cases recently. We came off our third wave about 2 months ago. So we're starting from a very low baseline. But we're now seeing a number of thousands of cases really rising in Johannesburg and the province of Gauteng.
And can you tell if those cases are Omicron or Delta?
The sequencing that has been done, the sequencing shows that the Omicron really is the predominant strain circulating at the moment in those cases that we have been able to survey in Gauteng province.
Is it possible to say then whether Omicron will gain prominence over Delta, given what you're seeing there?
I think obviously we can only say what's happening in this, here in South Africa. It does look very much as if Omicron is going to be the predominant strain. As I say, we've come off a very, very low background of cases, but the ones we are seeing are predominantly Omicron at the moment. Whether that will play out globally is obviously in question. There are differences within South Africa and other countries, but I think that it's likely that Omicron will probably take over from Delta in time, yes.
What can you tell us about the clinical condition of those who are testing positive?
Well, not an awful lot at the moment because, you know, in the beginning of a wave and when a variant does start to come through, one generally sees the mild cases first, and it takes a couple of weeks before you really see the impact with severe disease and hospitalisation and mortality. So, you know, we're really at the beginnings at the moment, and so we're seeing mild cases. And I see that, you know, in the international press that is largely being reported. Now, hopefully that will come to pass, that it will be more mild than the previous variants. But at the precise moment, we don't know. Give us a week, 10 days, and I think we'll have a better idea.
Is it still too early to say whether you're seeing a big difference in the clinical condition of those who are unvaccinated then?
It is too early to say. I think one has to focus on the fact that across the variants up until now, including Delta, that the vaccine has protected against severe disease, hospitalisation and death. It doesn't so much protect against mild infection or infection itself, but it does protect against severity, predominantly because, you know, the immune system is an extremely complex system. Everybody's focused on neutralising antibody, which is really mostly about whether the person will become infected at all. But the severity side, it brings in the T-cell, B-cell side of our immune system, and which is a very complex system. And so we are expecting, there's nothing to suggest at this moment in time, that protection against severe disease is going to be lacking against Omicron.
Our previous guest...
If you're vaccinated.
Our previous guest, the professor of epidemiology in Israel, Nadav Davidovich, says he believes that Omicron is now present right around the world. So is there any point then to closing borders and stopping travel, particularly from South Africa, where it happened very quickly in light of Omicron being discovered?
Absolutely not. I totally agree with your previous guest. The horse has clearly bolted from whichever country it did start from. And although South Africa was the first to report its findings, we don't know whether it originated in South Africa, of course, because unlike South Africa, many countries are not doing genomic sequencing and don't have that excellence and accessibility. So we don't know. But I think as of this morning, 25 countries have reported cases. It's clearly dispersed. And in this setting, travel bans do not protect against this virus. There's no way you can have selective travel bans against Southern Africa and expect that this virus isn't going to travel to your country. It's absolutely, that is the case. And that's why we are, you know, extremely frustrated, disappointed, and indeed angry at the international reaction, particularly of the United Kingdom, US, and European countries, that have imposed this ban, which we see as highly discriminatory against Southern Africa.
There's also a suggestion that these travel bans might result in other countries down the line being reluctant to report any variations they see.
Absolutely. Again, 100% spot on. I mean, I would very much hope that that is not the case, because it's absolutely critical that information is shared and data is shared globally. And South Africa's position is very clear that we are there to, you know, the surveillance is there to be made accessible to other countries. But if you are a country that, like South Africa, depends heavily, for example, on tourism, then you're going to think twice about that reporting and perhaps delay that reporting. So I think it is, these travel bans are extremely discriminatory, and they're also extremely unfortunate, because they do reduce the likelihood of countries being willing to share their data.
And Professor, the coverage of the Omicron variant has raised questions about vaccine fairness and distribution around the world. Are you hopeful now that South Africa will get a greater supply of vaccines in response to the rise that you're seeing there in cases?
But in South Africa, it's not a case, unfortunately. Now, it's not a case of actual supply. It's a case of being able to get vaccines into people's arms, because very sadly, like so many countries in the world, we're faced with vaccine hesitancy, distrust of government and various other factors that are playing into this. However, that initial, you know, go back a few months and the initial inequity of vaccine distribution, it would have had an impact, because the more this virus is allowed to replicate and circulate, the more likely you are to get variants which will have an evolutionary advantage and come to the fore. Now, South Africa does have supply, but many low and middle income countries still are without vaccine supply, and the inequity is very stark. The chasm between the global north and the global south is getting ever wider. And it's also very upsetting to see that the promises from many of the G20 countries in terms of their supplying vaccines to COVAX has not been met. The United Kingdom, again, for example, 100 million vaccines promised, 11.5% of those have actually been given. So that's not just the UK. So, yes, vaccine inequity, inequity to other tools, diagnostics, therapeutics, and the like, is also very prominent. So, yes, this is unfortunately a great divide.
Professor Mark Mendelsohn, thank you very much for talking to us today.